Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. Addiction is a condition that impacts all of us to some degree or another, yet it remains shrouded in a veil of secrecy and shame. The stigma and the shame that people feel about their struggles with substance abuse are two of the biggest barriers people face when battling addiction. In recognition of March being Sobriety Awareness Month, Line One is helping shine a light on addiction by hosting a conversation with three people who have made the decision to choose a life of sobriety. Joining me to discuss addiction, recovery, and hope are the 2023 Recover Alaska Sober Heroes, Rob Say of Anchorage, Johan Atkinson of Metlakatla, and Stevie Ray Agneson, Anguson of Naknek. Welcome to the program. Appreciate all of you for taking the time to be here today. Do we have audio? Okay. I just couldn't hear it in my ear.
There we go.
All right. I couldn't hear my guest in studio in my ear, and I had a little panic attack right there. Just a wee one. We only have Stevie with us for the first 20 minutes. She's out sunning herself in Vegas with her family, so we'll get to her in just a second. But I want to take just a minute to remind people that we value listener participation. If you have a question for my guests or a comment about today's topic, there are three ways to connect with us. If you're in the Anchorage area, our phone number is 907-550-8433. If you're listening outside of Anchorage, you can reach us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to reach us is to email your questions to line1@alaskapublic.org, and we'll do our best to get your question or your voice on the air. I do want to encourage listeners today to call in because, like I said in the intro, addiction touches all of us, whether it is ourselves personally. It impacts our community. It impacts our friends. It impacts our families, our relationships. And so please feel free to call in and share how it might have touched your life. All right. Let's get started. I was going to start with some of the Recover Alaska stuff and then build in, but none of my guests are work for Recover Alaska. So they just are the recipients of the 2023 Sober Hero Award. So maybe we can start off with that, and hopefully somebody from Recover Alaska will be able to join us and talk a little bit about their mission maybe later. But Stevie, since you'll only be with us for the first 20 minutes or so, each of you maybe just touch on how you came to be involved with this Sober Heroes program, just real briefly, and how do you get hooked up with that? Does somebody just find you and say, like, come take this, or were you nominated? Stevie, let's start with you.
I was nominated by one of the women over at Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation that works very closely or affiliates with them one way or another. I know that since I've been in recovery and I've been campaigning for recovery on many different platforms, I know the importance of my lived experience and the power of overcoming all of the obstacles that I did as an Alaskan Native woman who struggled with substance abuse and mental health disorders. And it's a pretty empowering and impactful story that throughout all my years of using, whoever knew that all my lived experience would come about to make some amazing changes for people who are still struggling in active addiction.
Right. That's, I think, what a lot of people don't understand is that lived experience and how powerful that can be in reaching out and touching other people. So, Johan, how'd you get involved with the Sober Alaska program?
Sober Heroes.
I too was nominated from my colleagues through an organization called The Alliance that I am involved with. And the Alliance is dedicated in ending underage drinking and excessive use and addiction in our villages here, or in all communities here in Alaska. And I've been very vocal, very loud about my sobriety, because it's really important for everybody in our communities to see people in our circle who are living a life of sobriety, who are learning from our learned experience, from our lived experiences, and doing the best we can, and through this path, and me always sharing my story, I was very honored to be able to be nominated for a Sober Hero this year.
All right, I think you brought up a really important point, the youth, the prevention piece. And that's a whole different radio program, but as you all know, all three of you, when you walk into the rooms, there's everybody's story, or 95% of them start with, I started at 14, I started at 15, I started at 12. You don't hear a lot of people that started drinking at 22 and then became alcoholics. I mean, it does happen, but you got to work at it. So that adolescent brain, there's something about the adolescent brain that is really wide open and can get wired for that addictive process to ramp up. All right, Rob, you want to share us a little bit about how you got here and how you got sort of nominated for this?
Sure. My name is Rob C., personal long-term recovery. That means to me, I've been sober since, well, I haven't had a drink or a good reason to drink since February 3rd of 2018, and it's a privilege to be here. I think I was nominated by my peers. I've had a couple people give me a call and say, "Hey, I nominated you," and one of them was a recipient of last year's award. So,
Okay.
and yeah, I live my recovery very loud, very vocal. I believe that sharing my story is absolutely a very, if not one of the main, the most important, but parts of my recovery. I share my story with other people to connect with them, whether that you're sober or not, so that you can get to know me. And by me putting my story out there, empowers other people, especially those who are experiencing issues with drinking and using substance or substance abuse. So it's kind of like a momentum that happens.
Right.
I share my story, you share your story, we connect, create the synergy, and we build off that.
Yeah, you're talking about connection, and that's one of the things that gets lost in addiction is that connection. And so, when you're sharing your story and they're sharing with you, there's a bond that builds and a depth. And that's what we're trying to do today here is to get these stories out there and put, well, you can't have faces because we're on the radio, but put voices to these stories and to humanize it a little bit because, like I said, addiction touches all of us. I mean, I know it's in my family, it's in my friends' families, and it's very destructive, health cost, incarcerations, all that stuff. So, but y'all know that. So we'll get to those stories. And let's go ahead and I guess we have a first phone call, so I want to get that before we get into Stevie's story. So Amelia from Eagle River, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you very much for taking my call. I'm a person in long-term recovery myself, and actually, I started late in life. My late 30s is when I went from a normal drinker to drinking to excess. But I just wanted to make a quick statement. It's the fact that if you do want to do inpatient treatment for alcoholism or addiction, there is only, that I know of, there's only one inpatient treatment center here, Ernie Turner. Otherwise, you have to go out of state, and we have a very limited number of detox treatment beds. Providence 180 is, I think, one of the only ones that will do an active detox. But just for Alaska and the prevalence of addiction in this state, it always surprises me the limited number of options we have for inpatient and detox beds. I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, I like that being a, you know, sort of a policy statement. We have to do something. Rob, you're nodding your head.
Yeah, and thank you for that call. That is definitely an issue that's being talked about. It's a hot topic of discussion, having detox beds, you know. But there are some initiatives that are going on right now. There's True North Recovery in Wasilla that just started the Lazarus Project, which is a walk-in facility that provides detox right away. You get an assessment, mental health assessment, a drug and alcohol assessment, and you can they have peer support specialists there that can help triage those services and different options for the individual that's seeking help. So there are things happening right now, but she is absolutely correct. There needs to be more of it.
As with adolescent mental health and across the board in Alaska, we fall short of supporting folks who need help. And it's, you know, get put on a 6-month waiting list. That's not super helpful. All right. Let's get to Stevie, because I know she's kind of got to get back to family and friends and enjoying the sun. So, Stevie, can you just take us through a little bit about your history and how you came to the point you're at now?
Yes, like you said earlier, we all have these stories of starting very young. I was 12, 13, 14 years old when I started experimenting with mind-altering substances, weed and drinking, and that it didn't take very long for me to get addicted and find my escape from reality through that. And had access to cocaine and other things that the kids around me didn't really have access to. And I wasn't afraid to use it. I was very bold, and I don't even really recall thinking that it made me cool, because I was hiding it a lot from the people around me. And it was just an easy escape from reality. There was this underlying hurt or trauma that I had no idea. And I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what was so to speak wrong with me. And mental health, you know, that was, I'm 38 now. 25 years ago, mental health or, you know, going to counseling or therapy wasn't normal for anyone in my school, yet rural Alaska, that we had an on-call counselor that I remember going in, and he had a little episode, and I finally went in and got brave enough to tell him that I was very suicidal. And I'm so grateful that, you know, I didn't get proper treatment by any means after that, but at least people knew to keep an eye on me. You know, I felt the love and support. I just felt that they also did not know what to do at all. But it was important for me to feel loved when I could see the people around me, how it affected me, watching them cry and not knowing really what to do. But and before I even graduated, I was heavily addicted to alcohol and anything really. I was in a car accident at the age of 19, I do believe, or actually it was 21. I was old enough to go to the liquor store. I got medevaced out, and I, the Indian Health Service, it was very easy for me to get my hands on narcotics through, that accident. I remember lying to the hospital of, you know, I exaggerated my pain, and I seen how easy it was for them to continue giving me that, opioid, which I got addicted to very fast. And at the time, I didn't realize that the Indian Health Service was pushing narcotics. The pharmaceutical companies were pushing narcotics amongst the Alaska Native Indian category of people. And I recall after that episode that I was heavily addicted to opioids, buying them off the streets. It changed my route of addiction. I started doing heroin. At the time, they called it brown. I didn't know it was heroin, and it wouldn't have stopped me. I don't believe I was so addicted to the pills that, you know, I was snorting them and finding other ways to let it get me high. And I was heavily addicted to that heroin, and with that I don't recall even having a, you know, asking for help and getting treatment. I don't, as an Alaska Native, then the Suboxone Clinic, the only time that I could use their treatment program was if I was pregnant. And I wasn't getting pregnant anytime soon. So it seems like everything else I needed, insurance, private insurance, with that car accident, I got a settlement and I checked myself into the Providence breakthrough, and there was a Suboxone first came out then with one of the doctors on. And another thing with their programs is you kind of have to be high when they give you an assessment, and it was, you know, it was hard to get my hands on money, and I had to, you know, it was a battle. It was a real struggle back then for me to get, and I know, and I could see that there's changes within the programs now that can help you get in without having all those barriers. But I'm so grateful for, you know, my first year with mental health and struggling with addiction and going into the counselor and doing therapy. I could see myself at the very beginning, and I could see myself at the very last time I went into treatment, that there was an active change in the ways that doctors treated me and the ways that they looked at me. I could see somewhere in the middle, something was kind of changing where I wasn't being pushed away or shoot out the door anymore. It wasn't like they were doing really, really amazing with me all of a sudden, but there was a, you know, a look in their eyes, like, you know, listening and asking me how I was, sincerity. And then somewhere near the end, they were doing really well, not treating me so bad, not stigmatizing. You know, you could tell something has changed. They did really good over there at Bristol Bay Area Health Corporation with their, you know, trauma-informed care or education, so to speak, you'd call it. My journey as an Alaska Native woman who was on the streets and who was heavily stigmatized, that shame and guilt kind of did keep me down. Somewhere along the lines of my recovery journey, I remember sharing my story and the impact it had on the people who I was surrounded by. And that's what kept me to share my story, to see how it would help them. And the things that I'm overcoming, it helps them tremendously. I know the importance for the people in my region, the Bristol Bay region, to have someone to look up to give them hope, is important to me and to them.
Wow, that's impressive. I think they have a really good person in that spot. You sound like you have a lot of knowledge and wisdom and power, and I appreciate you taking the time to share that. Did you, one question I had, like, you said you noticed a shift in how they went from dismissing you and not seeing you to really, to then starting to see you and then to really, I don't know, understand you, I guess. Was that shift as you went through this process? Do you think it was education and the system got better? Or do you think that you felt better and connected with people differently?
I know that I didn't connect well with people at all. My boundaries and my whole life was a wreck. So the connection didn't even really come a year into my recovery. So no, it wasn't me. It was definitely the system, the organization was changing. And I think it's just the education that they probably had received. I think somewhere along the lines, the resources were always there, and someone probably even came in and said, hey, we're giving you this large amount of money to help these people, and you're not helping these people properly, is what I personally, because I was just in so many times, and who knew I would be kind of like learning, that I would be able to use my voice one day and say, hey, this is how I went in, this is how you made me feel when I left. I'd often leave organizations feeling worse than when I went in, and actually probably going in and drinking and using a lot more than before, you know?
It's really pretty amazing how many professionals in the helping profession, even in mental health and substance abuse, do not have that humanity or that sense of compassion, and they still can look down on people. I think it's great that you found your own voice and can be a certain, and say to people, this is how that made me feel. So I think that's a word for professionals. It's important how you treat people and how you engage with people for anybody in the helping community. All right. We are at our first 20-minute break. And Stacy, do you need to take off? I mean, Stevie?
Yeah. Thank you for hosting us. I really appreciate you doing this. I know the importance of it.
Yeah. And your voices are critical. So thank you for all that you do, and keep up the good work.
All right.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, Stevie.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, my guests today are the Recover Alaska Sober Heroes for 2023. We just heard from Stevie Ray Anginson from NACNEC, who's doing her thing out there, helping people and trying to spread the word. So if you have a question for us today or a story that you want to share about how addiction has touched your life, please don't hesitate to give us a call. In Anchorage, our local number is 907-550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can call us toll-free at 1-888-353-5752. And the last way to get your questions on the air is to email us at lineone@alaska.org. After a short break, we will continue with more of our conversation, and we will hear from Johan, and Rob will help take us the rest of the way. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You are listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Seward Peninsula Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will develop proposals to change federal subsistence hunting and trapping regulations and discuss other subsistence-related issues. The public is invited to participate in the meeting March 22nd and 23rd in Nome. More information at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just joining us today, my guests are the Recover Alaska Sober Heroes for 2023. We started off with Stevie Ray Anginson, who's in Vegas, and she had to dip out for the remainder. And we have Rob Say of Anchorage, who is in studio, and Johan Atkinson, who is in Metlakatla. You out there right now, Johan?
Yes, I'm here.
All right. Yeah, I wish I could see you, or I can see you. I wish you could see me. I'm going to have to set that up because it's better to have that face-to-face. But I guess kind of the same questions. We'll go through the two of you guys' story here for the last half hour of our program. But before you get started, I want to go ahead to the phones, because we have another caller. Lauren, you're on line one. Go ahead.
Hello. I am calling because I have a friend, and they've been through treatment like 15 times. They've tried, and they're doing pretty good, still relapsing. And my question is, what I noticed, it is so hard to get into treatment. There's so many steps, so many things they have to do. And I don't understand why it can't be easier.
That's a great question. Either one of you guys want to tackle that?
I'll let Johan
All right, Johan, you want to respond to Lauren there?
Yeah. First off, thank you, Lauren, for calling in. And that's a really great point that you were bringing up that needs to be talked about, needs to be addressed. You know, here in my community in Metlakatla, Alaska, you know, we definitely see that problem, that issue. You know, you got to go through so many hoops. You got, and going through the stigma, going through the requirements to help individuals receive treatment, receive help, has put a lot of barriers through people throughout Alaska. And one of the solutions, if you allow me to, one of the things that we have done here in my village is we have created a circle of support here in our community. And what we have done, we have been able to, every other week we gather, and it's us telling our life experiences, who we are as people, where we are at. And having that support from our community has been a huge crucial step in helping individuals stay on that right path, helping individuals make that choice to step on this path. And because we wanted to share statewide of what we are doing, of having sharing the support of sobriety, sharing the support of helping individuals statewide, I actually have been fortunate enough to work with the organization Data for Indigenous Justice, and every other week we hold support circles for men, for fathers, for uncles, for brothers and sons to come together every Friday night to just to be able to connect, to build those relationships, you know, because through on what was said earlier, through addiction, through everything that we go through, there's been a big disconnect with our community and ourselves. So us to be able to support each other more locally, we have been able to share that statewide as well. And if this this friend of yours is a father, a son, uncle, or a brother, you know, I want to extend that invitation. You know, it's and the link is on the Data for Indigenous Justice Facebook page. It's just to be able to help our men throughout Alaska to get support locally, and it's just another resource, another support system that we could get here in Alaska. You know, because sometimes being able to reach out and get the support needed through the treatment centers has been a struggle at times, and you are not alone on this. You know, there are many who are also having that same issue, you know, and I just want to share that with you. You know, you are not alone, and your relative, your friend, you know, is not alone, and there are many people throughout the state, you know, who truly care. And so anything that we could do to help, you know, we will.
Yeah, Johan, you make a good point that there are a lot of online resources now. That's one of the benefits of COVID, is it sort of opened up this whole world of support systems that are done online. And there's lots of AA meetings and NA meetings that are you don't have to leave your living room. You know, Lauren, I'll also add to that addiction is, you know, there's this thing called the law of thirds, that about a third of people who get into addiction or get into recovery will get it the first or second time, and they'll roll right on. And then there's people in this chronic relapse, sort of sobriety relapse. And then about a third will never get any help and they'll die. That's sort of, yeah, Rob's nodding his head. You got something to add?
Yeah. And I just want to, thank you for advocating for your friend, you know, first and foremost. That's what we need. We need people to love us when we didn't know how to love ourselves. Somebody loved me when I didn't know how to love myself. And so I applaud you for speaking up for your friend. And, you know, just real quick, you know, there are some connections. Sober support. You need a sober support network, period. If you're in recovery, if you have problems with over drinking, or if you think you're an alcoholic or an addict, you need to build your sober support network. And we have that. I want to give a shout out to the Peer Support Network on Facebook, Peer Support Group. You can look us up. And, you know, there's a strong, strong nucleus of people who have found a way from a seemingly hopeless condition, that we can help you. We can help fill those gaps. You know, if you're waiting for treatment or you've been in treatment and you're waiting for sober living, just send us a message through there and somebody, it'll be a multitude. It's like piranhas on there. And we're looking to help people every day. And I'll leave my contact here as well. And this is what I do all day long. You know.
All right. All right, Lauren, hopefully some of that information is helpful, but you know, it takes on average 10, 12 times of attempts. It's rarely the first attempt right. or
just
the third.
Just don't give up. Don't give up.
Don't give up. Yeah. You keep reaching out and keep hoping. So, all right, we are flying through our hour here. So, and I do want to give time for our guests to share their story. And I think Johan, are you with us? Or I just see a kayak and a beautiful.
Looks nice.
Yes, I am here.
It does look nice. Looks like a nice spot. Is that Metlakatla?
Yeah, that's my village, and that is our Tsimshian canoe, and we use our traditional canoe to help families, men and women, aunties and uncles, to live a traditional life, to live a life of sobriety, live a life of wellness. It's always that cultural tool, that canoe that you've seen, is a big part of what we use to help our community.
All right. Well, let's turn it over to you. It looks like a beautiful place, look like paradise. So let's turn it over to you if you can go ahead and just share some about how you got here and what you're doing now and what it's brought to your life.
Yeah. First off, thank you for inviting me, and thank you for all the phone calls and for all who's listening. You know, so my name is Johan Atkinson. I'm from Metlakatla, Alaska, you know, and I just celebrated, last month was my 1 year of sobriety, and it was a pretty big celebration for myself, you know, because my whole entire life, you know, I've been surrounded by addiction, and my first memories, my very first memories as a child was of alcohol use, you know, as with many of us, you know, we have a lot of friends and family that we love dearly, who are living a life of addiction, you know. So, and then I began this journey of really understanding who I was as a father, as a man, as an uncle, as a brother, as a son, you know, and having alcohol in my life was restricting me from understanding that. Because it was the daily use, it was the coming home and suppressing all of my thoughts and emotions, and to be able to, and it was everyday use, you know. And then once I started to surround myself with individuals who introduced me and helped me relearn into two words, accountability and responsibility, it led me into this path of what I need to face as a person, as a human being, as a father, as an Alaskan Native man, you know. And so once I eliminated alcohol from my life, you know, I was able to really understand who I was and the journey that I'm on, you know, and the journey that I should be on. And that was the big one, you know, and in order for me to heal and strengthen my own spirit, you know, I had that didn't happen until I started living a life of sobriety. And I've been very vocal in sharing my story. I included my sons on the day that I made a commitment to eliminate alcohol. It was the last bottle of vodka that I had in my house. My sons and I drove out to the other side of the island here in Metlakatla, Alaska, and they took their 22s, and I had them shoot the last bottle, because I had to include people who I love dearly to hold me accountable. You know, I needed that strength from others, from my friends and my family. And I shared it on social medias, you know, been very vocal about my story. And because in a way, I needed everyone else to hold me accountable, you know, because when I was going through the daily use and through my own addiction, you know, I'm not ashamed to say that I wasn't strong enough to outright quit right then and there. I needed help. And that's something that was one of the most best decisions of my life, was actually admitting as a man, I need help. And that is okay, you know, and to have my sons involved, you know, they shot at the same time, their 22s, shot the bottle. I set up my GoPro camera, put it in slow motion and everything. You know, wow. I needed to watch that. I needed to see that every single day, and having my family and friends hold me accountable and why I'm doing this, because everybody in my circle, they deserve the best me. And I wasn't giving them the best me with alcohol in my life, you know, and that was hard to admit. And just talking about that gets me emotional, you know. So once I eliminated that, you know, my life has drastically changed as a father, as a man. And, you know, so I just want the people in my community and the people who have a chance to hear my story, see my story, to know that there are many people out there that are that are living a life of sobriety. And you know, sometimes we need help, you know, sometimes we need help, you know, and that's perfectly fine. You know, ask for the help, because it's out there. You know, you are not alone. And, you know, once you make that decision, and sometimes it's a hard decision because addiction has a strong grip. It has, you know, has a really strong grip at times, you know, so it's, I just always share, you know, you are not alone. You have people that truly care for you, and you have, you know, that power to be able to take that step, take that first step into living a healthier life, you know, and to eliminate anything that's holding you back from understanding who you are. And what I mean by that, understanding your strengths. You know, and I had to eliminate alcohol from my life to understand my strengths, you know, and, you know, I'm in my 40s, I'm 41 years old. So at 40 years old, that's when I decided to better my life. And it's never too late. You know, I'm not mad that I started in my 40s. I'm happy that the rest of my life, I'm going to have the best days of my life are yet in front of me, because I'm living a life of sobriety, and everybody in my circle that I surround myself with, the young people, you know, my cousins, my friends, you know, they will always know and see me as another man in my community who's dedicating his life to living a sober life, to sobriety and bettering myself, you know. And I wasn't able to really do that until I eliminated alcohol from my life. So that motivates me every single day, you know, and I wasn't able to do that by myself. I had to receive help from my family and friends. And sometimes you need to do that. And there's nothing wrong with that.
All right, Johan, you've been at this for a while telling this story. I'm sure this isn't the first time you've told this story, right? And I want to go back to that intensity of emotion that hit you. You got flooded there. I can see you, and it was powerful seeing that. And if those tears could, like, if they had words, what's it about? Because it's not sadness.
It's healing. It's healing. It's healing and hope. You know, the hope that I have for everybody in my community. The hope that I have for everybody tuning in and listening. You know, there are people that truly care. You know, that want everybody who has to face the stigma of when you're battling addiction, you know, or reaching out for help, you know, there's people that will look past that, you know, and us three who are here, who got nominated for Sober Heroes, you know, we would be gladly, we would would drop everything to be just to have a moment to let you all know, you know, that we understand. There's no judgment because, you know, people judged us, people didn't judge us. So we truly understand how that feels, you know. So that's the reason why we are very vocal in our story, you know. And so, yeah, I do get emotional when I'm talking about this, you know, because in Alaska, you know, our numbers on so many negative issues and problems that we have, you know, we lead the country in so many issues, you know, and a lot of that is influenced by alcohol use, you know. And the more we share our stories and the more we hear of the hope of what's out there and of how many people care and how we could make this state smaller by showing support to one another, by the resources that are out there, you know, I truly believe we can change the direction of the state. There's no doubt in my mind that that could happen. And all my friends and family hear this, you know, all the time. And I'm going to say it here, in this generation, yeah. We could yeah. turn things around, and it's going to require us to be very vocal about the things that we are going through and what we hope and dream for.
Well, that's a very powerful message. And, I really appreciate you taking the time to share that. It sounds like there's a lot of gratitude mixed up in there. And, you know, the thing about substance abuse and addiction is, like, when you're in it, you don't know. You can't just numb negative feelings. Mm-hmm. You numb them all.
Yeah.
All right, so we're at our second break. I do have the executive director of Recover Alaska on here, and I need to get to Rob's story John, you're welcome to hang on and listen to us and continue jumping in. But I do need to take my second break. So if you're just joining us, my guests today are Recover Alaska Sober Heroes for 2023. This is Rob Say and Johan Atkinson, Stevie Ray Anginson. And today they are sharing their stories of addiction and hope and gratitude. And I hope if you have a question for us or a story, you'll have to get it in quick after you come back from the break, because we are running out of time. I'm sure I could have these guys on for 2 or 3 hours and we just keep rolling. So after the short break, we'll continue our conversation. I'm Prentice Pemberton. You're listening to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Public Media is designed for and made possible by the communities it serves. Monies generated through estate and deferred gifts enable public radio to provide our listeners, you, with the level of programming excellence you've come to expect. It may also reduce income and estate taxes. Consult your financial advisor or contact your public radio station to learn more.
Welcome back to Line One, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I'm your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guests today are the recipients of the Recover Alaska Sober Heroes Award for 2023. Rob Say, John Atkinson, and Stevie Ray Anginson of NACNAC. So before we get into Rob's story here, I know Tiffany Hall jumped out of a meeting to hop on here. She's the executive director for Recover Alaska. Tiffany, welcome to Line One. I appreciate you jumping out. And could you take just a second to give us a little bit about Recover Alaska, what they're doing, and sort of the mission?
Yeah, thanks so much, Prentice. Appreciate y'all hosting this conversation. So Recover Alaska is a statewide action group working to reduce excessive alcohol use and harms across the state. And we are not a provider of direct services. We try to do that at the system level. So that looks like advocacy and policy change, connecting people, access to care, connecting people to resources, prevention. We hold a statewide network of preventionists working in substance prevention, but also, you know, suicide, violence prevention, all these things are interconnected. And then the fourth area is really social norms, and that's trying to reduce stigma for folks who need help with alcohol, for populations who need help with alcohol, their loved ones. And it's also honoring and celebrating sobriety and recovery, and just trying to make make sure folks know that alcohol is not the norm, doesn't need to be the norm. And so that's where our Sober Heroes program comes in. And we just started this last year, but we had been talking for a little while about how can we really lift up these stories and these examples of folks who are doing the work every day and living in this really beautiful way of being. I know when I first got sober, I just didn't know who else was. Like, I didn't have many positive role models, and we want to shift that. And so we are super, super blessed and lucky to be able to recognize these three folks. And I'm talking quickly because I want to make sure I can hear Rob's story and everyone else can too. So we're really, really grateful to be working with them and to get to learn more about them. And then in turn, they can kind of be advocates for Recover to make sure folks know that we are a resource for any needs around alcohol, whether that's data or help or anything in between. And just really happy to be able to honor the work and the beautiful examples from these three folks.
All right. Well, Tiffany, thank you for joining us. And I agree with you. We got to move on here. But it sounds like y'all are behind the scenes sort of pulling the strings and kind of directing how this works. So thank you for all that you're doing.
Absolutely.
All right. I have a phone call. Marlene, I'm going to take you, but you got to make it brief because I got to get to Rob here. So you're on line one, Marlene. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I just wanted to say, I heard the lady about going to treatment center, and anyway, I feel her feeling, but we have treatment center out of Cotabu. I don't know if that's still open. I work for Spud Farm, Common Sick Vic. Anyway, there was a treatment center there outside of Selwick, and had to go there, fly to Selwick, there's no machine up there. And anyway, that one worked with people from different parts of the state, they let me bring my grandson there to work. And on the other hand, I wonder, they got to have a voice on those people getting out of the jails.
Yeah.
That's been in there. They from all the world hubs, Bethel area, Cotabu, Bellwood, they did leave them in Anchorage. They should just send them back to their hubs. They have to go through some kind of probationary period, and then somehow they start drinking or something and drugs, and they never come back.
Then they're stuck. That's a really good point, and one that is a big problem that I've heard a number of times from different folks. So I really appreciate you calling in, Marlene, and pointing out that problem. I appreciate you listening, and thanks for the work you're doing.
Yeah.
All right. I could answer. I'd like to hear more on that issue, but we're going to run out of time, Rob. So I really want to get to you. It's why we're here.
Thank you.
You three and honoring and celebrating. So I want to give you that respect and that time. So go ahead and give us the lowdown.
First and foremost, just want to thank God for this opportunity, and thank Recover Alaska for this awesome, awesome, not just award, but experience and connection. And shout out to last year's recipients as well, Blaze Bell, Wesley Brewington, and Ralph Sarah, three people that I'm very close to, three people that will definitely walk alongside you in your recovery, and people that I admire. And thank you, Alaska Public Media, as well, for having me on and being able to share my story, having a platform that we can cross a lot of these barriers that are out there about recovery, So just thank you for this small time, and hopefully we can do it again. So, my name is Rob C. I was born in Birmingham, Alabama, raised in Portland, Oregon. I've lived in Alaska, Anchorage, Alaska for almost 20 years. Proud husband, going on 17 years, I think. And father of three.
I think. You better figure it out.
Yeah, I know, right? She's probably listening, too. Hi, babe.
Uh-huh. you'll have a conversation.
Right. Proud husband, proud father of three, and grandpa of one and a half.
No, yeah. If y'all could see him, you wouldn't believe that.
We were just talking before, this is all about maintenance, right?
Maintenance.
It's all about maintenance here now. But yeah, you know, I grew up in a very broken home, but I was raised around some strong women in my life. My mother, she practiced the principles that I live by now all of our life. And Granny, it was between my mom, Granny, and Big Mama. You know, they really raised a strong man. And they taught me how to be spiritually disciplined, honor God, and be of service to other people. And those are the things that I do today that govern my recovery, that govern my life, that I try to focus on. My father was the polar opposite, you know, and kind of came and went as he pleased, kind of the Rolling Stone. So, you know, growing up, I saw things in black and white. Everything was all good. Everything was all bad. I saw, experienced a lot of different abuses. Physical, mental, everything you could think of. And in recovery has given me an opportunity to heal from those things, continually heal. You know, it's not just a one shot all. That's why I want to definitely encourage anybody who's struggling out there, if you're relapsing over and over and over again, just don't give up. You know, this is part of the path, it's part of the journey. But for me, you know, I grew up and I just always felt awkward. Always felt weird. You know, we say in recovery, you know, the square peg trying to fit in the round hole. And, you know, I just didn't feel any real worth. And until I picked up my first drink when I was 12. And my sister, you know, she ran with a rowdy bunch. She was like my best friend. She's a year older than me. And so I went to the parties, the house parties, early 90s, middle 90s, you know, it was like the allure of the streets were present, you know, and I had my first drink at a party and three things were happening. There was drugs and alcohol, there was music, and there was a fight. And I was like, for whatever reason, I took a drink and jumped right into it. And I didn't look back until 5 years ago when I got sober.
You were like, I'm home.
I'm in. I made it. All of a sudden, I wasn't the square peg. It was like, not only am I invited to the party, I feel like I belong, you know. So, yeah. And, you know, I've struggled off and on ever since, till 5 years ago when I decided to get sober. And for me, it took a lot, you know. At the time, me and my wife, we were split. I was living on my own. And I remember the when I really knew that I had a problem, I was sitting at the bar, it was after work, and I knew that I had to go and pick up my kids. I knew I was going to meet my kids. And I was like, if I have one drink, I know that I will not pick up my kids. And who knows what's going to happen after that. And I contemplated this, you know, and sure enough, like, you know, we call it the insanity of the first drink. You know, we know that it's going to get us if we take it. Took it anyway. And I woke up like 2 days later, you know, not knowing what happened. So that's when I knew I had a problem. Now, I didn't get sober right away. You know, it wasn't for like another, you know, 6, 7, 8 months where I found a program of recovery. That I still work to this day that helped me to live literally one day at a time. The God of my own understanding. And, you know, I'm not a religious man. I have issues with organized religion, but I do believe in the gospel. I do believe in Jesus. But literally one day at a time, doing that one day at a time, honoring God, being of service to others, and being of service to others is a huge thing. And that's why I'm here today. You know, I've learned to say yes to my recovery. They're like, hey, will you do a story? Yes. Recovery's offered me opportunities that I would have never taken for myself. I would have never said yes to anything like this. It would be really uncomfortable for me to sit here and share my story. It's filled with a lot of different things, a lot of violence as a juvenile. I was on the streets. I've got tattoos on my body from when I was 13 years old, you know. In and out of juvie, and that kind of carried on off and on throughout my life. And until I was like 39 years old, I'm still acting like a little the gangbanger from the streets. What's wrong with me? You know, and I've got kids and I've got a, you know, I'm a husband. What's wrong with me? So I'm appreciative. I'm thankful for this opportunity. And I really would like to get into more of my story. I know we're pressed for time. And so if there's any callers or anything, you know, that you have any questions. A lot of people, what I've heard today is people saying that there's not enough treatment beds. Yeah. There's not a lot of options. This is the time, I'm going to tell you right now, like, you know, the recovery community right now is growing massively. There are efforts and movements. What I do, I'm also, you know, it hasn't really officially been announced, but I am the deputy director for Hanning Inc., Hanning Incorporated. We're a nonprofit. We oversee all the shelters, the Sullivan, the Alex, the Aviator, and we are a peer-led organization. People that have been there, that have lived it. We literally walk alongside people that enter in our shelters, and we get them fed and warm, get them in transition to living, and get them assessed, intervention, and then transition into the proper program. So with that, you know, I want to leave my contact here. And if you or anyone you know are struggling, you know, you're struggling with any area of your life, primarily any kind of addiction, hard drinking, it doesn't matter what it is. We can get you connected to the people to walk alongside you.
All right. That's that was really powerful. And like you painted a picture that was that. I have to apologize. Like, I've been on the radio for 9 years and I have not made that mistake. And so if I don't know if I have a job later, but I was so struck by that moment, like of that decision right there, that just came out of me. I felt
right
where you were.
I appreciate it.
And that's intense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's addiction, right? And that's like your kids.
Right. Yeah.
Versus, and everybody do I
knows,
do this?
Right. And everybody that knows me knows how much I love my kids.
Right. That's got nothing to do with it.
But that allure, you know, that insanity that gets you in that moment, and it doesn't mean that you don't love your kids any less.
No, it's just a deep, primitive lizard brain.
Right.
Like oxygen. I need it.
Right.
Like oxygen.
I'm
going to
do it. It's going to happen.
All right.
I appreciate you a lot. Thank you.
All right. Well, that's we are right at the end of it. So, Rob made me lose my professionalism there for a minute. But those are powerful stories, and I really appreciate everybody coming on. Please be sure to share today's episode and help spread the word about addiction and recovery. And if you're out there struggling, reach out. Find some people who can support you. We'll have these resources available on our show page today. So reach out to Rob and all these good folks and get that help and keep trying. So my thanks to Line One producer Madeline Rose and our audio engineer Chris Hyde. For all of us at Line One, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today. Until next time, I'm Prentice Pemberton. Have a great day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.